Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, coming to you live from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan, Sudan, and the rest of Africa this Friday, November 22nd, 2024. Calm has returned to South Sudan's capital, Juba. We have our reporter, Dennis Logonyi, live from Juba. Dennis, tell us what you're seeing in the capital.
Today we are seeing that the calm that has come after yesterday's shooting around Juba. And as we talk, shops are open, people are moving, though there's some kind of checking, and of course the soldiers are checking for weapons. However, calm has really returned since yesterday's...
And we'll come back to that story. The Bishop of Iba Diocese in the Episcopal Church of South Sudan is calling on authorities to repair roads in Western Equatoria State.
Road is our problem. That's why you see we are struggling here with business. If the road could be clear, I believe by now Yambio could have been competing with Juba, one of the cities in South Sudan, if it can be fixed.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Gunfire erupted on Thursday evening in the capital, Juba, sparking fear across the town. The shooting around the home of former chief spy, General Akol Kur Kuch, who was fired by President Salva Kiir in early October and placed under house arrest, caused panic among local residents before it was contained after about half an hour. The incident took place during an attempt to relocate the ex-head of National Security Service from his stomping residence to one of his houses at Jebel residential area. But the army blamed, quote, misunderstanding between security forces deployed to protect Akol Kur. We have with us in Juba our reporter Dennis Logonyi. Dennis, I understand the spokesperson for the South Sudan military had a press conference today in Juba. What did he say?
At the press conference which happened at the SSBC, the government broadcaster, we had a press conference, and the SSPDF spokesperson, Major General Lou Rai, he pointed out that what he called the major big news that Akol Kur has accepted that he's relocating to his Jebel House after the president had a meeting with the CDF. So they relocated him this evening. And then he says on the development, there were some soldiers who we lost, two were lost, and then two civilians were also lost.
You mean two soldiers died in the shooting? Dennis, you mean when you say two were lost, you mean two soldiers died in the shootout last night?
Yes, two soldiers. The one was inside the fence where Akol Kur was, and then the other one was from the forces that had come to his residence. And then during the shootout, two other civilians were also caught in crossfire, and those are injured. He mentioned that they are at the hospital currently.
And talk to us about life in Juba town. I mean, there are, you know, a lot of information coming out from various WhatsApp groups, especially people in the neighboring countries, Uganda, Kampala, Nairobi, and even in Washington here, sending information that is depicting a wrong picture of the situation in the town. What are you seeing in town?
Yeah, of course, given the previous conflicts that happened in the country, every nation is worried, and including the civilians in this country here, they are worried about the situation. But however, since yesterday, today morning, people woke up when they are still worried, but they gained up, and we saw shops that opening up, and they started to gain momentum slowly by slowly. And then also there was a procession from the Catholic Church moving from Gurei up to Katol. So these were all signs to show that people were coming up, though they did not start immediately to open, but slowly by slowly until now, vehicles are moving and the calm has really returned and we have not even heard of any gunshot since.
And what is typical life for commuters in Juba? For instance, if you want to drive from one point to other point of the city, how is that drive? Is it smooth? Is it having challenges?
Well, with movement, those using those who are on foot, they move without any stopover. But those who are using vehicles, mostly they are stopped for checking, and mostly what they check for are the whether a car is having weapons, and those cars that do not want to stop. But motorbikes, the rapsers are moving just as usual.
And what about markets? Are markets open? Are you able to go and buy your favorite food to stock in case of anything?
Yeah, like I said in the morning, there was need to build confidence, and you know, people were worried, and slowly by slowly, we saw people opening shops, and people can go to buy whatever they want. And some busy places like Imunuki, Haisoura, Juba Town, Konyo Konyo, all these shops are open.
Thank you, Dennis, and keep updating us on the situation in Juba. That was our reporter, Dennis Logonyi, coming to us live from South Sudan's capital after Thursday's shootout. A religious leader in Western Equatoria State says bad road conditions between the state and South Sudan's capital, Juba, is affecting travelers who depend on the road for supplies of much-needed goods and services. For VOA News, Matias Samuel Timoteo has more from the state capital, Yambio.
Wilson Kamani, the Bishop of Iba Diocese in the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, says he spent 18 hours driving from Iba to Juba earlier this week, a distance of about 272 kilometers. He says the state and national government need to fix the road which connects Western Equatorial State to South Sudan's capital, Juba.
Frankly speaking, the road that connects us to Juba is very bad, and if you travel by that road, you will know that the road is not good this time. There are a number of potholes on the way, and this time my car got stuck twice. The same experience that we experienced, it also happens to some of our Christians or some of our members who travel by that road, and the bad thing is that it has a huge impact on people. Let us take example of the traders. A trader at any time can just fix a price on the commodities, and sometimes it is going to be unaffordable for other people.
Samuel Anbiko is an entrepreneur in Yambio who deals in stationery and electronics. He says traders must spend extra money to bring goods to Yambio because of the bad roads.
Road is our problem. That's why you see we are struggling here with business. If the road could be clear, I believe by now Yambio could have been competing with Juba, one of the cities in South Sudan. If it can be fixed, we can progress well, and it can create employment for our youth. Not only me, but for people who have also some agricultural products, they can be exporting to Juba, but due to the bad road, this cannot be done as soon as possible in the meantime.
Antuna Richard is the state minister for roads, transport and bridges. She says the national government is responsible for building and maintaining major roads connecting the states to other towns.
Actually, this ministry, it is called Ministry of Roads and Bridges, but for me as a minister, I call it Ministry of No Roads, because we are not rehabilitating roads, opening roads for people. So the state ministry of roads and bridges, we are left vulnerable to do road activities. Even to repair a bridge is a problem. So I appeal to the national government Chief to look seriously into the issue of Western Equatoria, because Western Equatoria is a food basket. Now, I would like to appreciate the people who have decided to look at the suffering of the community, and they gave themselves to help us with the rehabilitation of this road, especially filling of the major potholes.
For many years, the 355 kilometers trunk road from Yambio to Juba has been a major challenge to motorists and vehicles transporting goods from Juba to Western Equatoria State and vice versa. For VOA News, I am Matia Samuel Timatio, reporting from Western Equatoria State capital, Yambio.
From Yambio, we go to Port Sudan. Cameron Hudson, a senior fellow with the Africa Program at the Center for Strategic Studies, visited Port Sudan and met with various Sudanese officials. He tells my colleague Carol Van Damme that although peace talks are stalled, the Sudanese army appears to be more willing to reach a negotiated conclusion to its conflict with the paramilitary rapid support forces.
What I take away from my visit is that I think that the army is actually more prepared to sit down and negotiate than I had anticipated. Every war that they have ever fought and ended has ended through some kind of ceasefire agreement and peace agreement. It's never involved total battlefield victory. And so that's not something that they're used to, and frankly, not something that they hold out as an expectation of this war. And so they are prepared at some point to sit down and talk and negotiate. I think the conditions right now are probably not right for that. And I think both on the battlefield they're not right, but also I think in the international community, there's no obvious player right now that I think can effectively mediate this. And I think they're hoping, moreover, that they can first and foremost get the United Arab Emirates to suspend their support to the rapid support forces. They are entirely convinced that if they can suspend that support, that the war would end literally in a matter of days.
You say they think that. Do you think that too?
I don't know that it's a matter of days, but I think it's a matter of weeks. Yes, I think that the RSF will have a very difficult time sustaining itself. Now, it's making a lot of money in gold exports and other business ventures, which by and large it has not been using to finance this war. So if it chose to use that money to finance the war, it might be able to sustain itself a bit longer. But certainly I think losing the political protection that the Emirates gives, as well as the material support, would go a long way in not just ending the war, but changing the calculus of the RSF, that they don't have unlimited options, that their options are in fact running out. And by changing that calculus, I think it will change, their willingness to talk.
Are there any talks even going on right now?
No, there are no talks going on right now. I know that both sides say publicly that they would be willing to talk, but right now there is no talk of ceasefire happening.
Does it seem to you like we're still at a point where the two sides are trying to gain ground militarily, on the ground before anything gets more real and more official about coming to the negotiating table?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they would be, trying to make ground any way they can, irrespective of whether talks were imminent or going on. That's just the nature of fighting. And so I wouldn't say that either side has an upper hand right now. Maybe the army has a bit more momentum. They've had some early wins. The army is rebuilding itself. It's growing in strength. It's recruiting new recruits, and it is bringing in, new weapons. And so it's I would say, evening the playing field with the RSF, which has had the upper hand for the better part of this war. So there might be a slight momentum shift, but it hasn't translated really into substantial, strategic shifts on the battlefield yet.
That's Cameron Hudson, a senior fellow with the Africa Program at the Center for Strategic Studies. He was speaking to VOA's Carol Van Damme after visiting Port Sudan. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Trump's nominee backs off. Find out why after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump's nominee for Attorney General of the United States, former Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz, withdrew himself from consideration Thursday. As VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports, Gaetz was facing a tough confirmation process due to various criminal allegations.
A close ally of President-elect Donald Trump.
Donald Trump is unstoppable.
Former Republican Representative Matt Gaetz on Thursday withdrew from consideration to become Attorney General of the United States. Gaetz was being investigated by the House Ethics Committee for various criminal allegations. He has denied those claims, but many U.S. lawmakers were concerned about his fitness to lead the Department of Justice. Democratic Senator Chris Coons.
Congressman Gaetz, who I do not know personally, certainly has a reputation as a fierce advocate for President Trump, but also has been the subject of credible allegations of significant severe misconduct.
A four-term congressman and member of the House Armed Services Committee, Gaetz challenged the leadership of then-Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, Kevin McCarthy, over what he considered excessive government spending.
Real chaos is when the American people have to go through the austerity that is coming if we continue to have $2 trillion annual deficits.
Tech billionaire Elon Musk praised Gaetz earlier this week. The owner of the social platform X said Gaetz will be, quote, our hammer of justice. But many senators, including Republicans, expressed reluctance to confirm him without more information about those allegations. Claire Finkelstein is a law professor at the University of Pennsylvania.
It's profoundly problematic to have the highest law enforcement position in the United States occupied by someone who has arguably committed significant crimes. And though he has not been charged with a crime, it is important nonetheless for the Senate to consider his conduct from the standpoint of both ethics and legality, whether the conduct was ever formally charged or not.
Gaetz resigned from the current Congress after being nominated for Attorney General. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
From Washington, we go to Nairobi, where the UN Environmental Program says communities living in dry lands are the most affected by global warming, with frequent droughts and subsequent floods, rendering traditional livelihoods like farming and livestock keeping nearly impossible. Conservation experts in Kenya are helping such communities develop climate-resilient alternative livelihood like beekeeping to help them cope with changing weather patterns. Juma Majanga reports from Gersen, Kenya.
In the scorching afternoon sun in Gersen on the Kenyan coast, Maurice Kadenge is harvesting honey at his beekeeping farm. Kadenge, a member of the traditionally farming Pokomo community in the Tana River Delta region, says he embraced beekeeping after perennial droughts and flooding affected his farming activities. The father of nine says the new venture has improved his circumstances.
I feel like it has transformed my life in a big way. It gives me an income which helps in the upkeep of my family. My wife and children eat well, dress well, and the kids go to school.
Kadenge is one of the beneficiaries of the Tana Delta Green Heart Initiative, a project aimed at helping communities affected by climate change develop livelihoods that also promote environmental conservation. An East African Environmental Society, Nature Kenya, is implementing the project in partnership with the Kenyan government and other organizations. Ernest Simeoni is the director of African Beekeepers, which developed the beekeeping initiative for the Delta area.
We are directly involved in managing these beehives. The community, they contribute to the land. They contribute some slight labor, where there's some security they have to take part in security, making sure that the beehives are not stolen or tampered, and get money.
Nature Kenya says it has so far given out over 50,000 beehives to individual farmers and various groups in the Delta area. Milka Musioki is field project manager at Nature Kenya in Garsen.
We come in with the community don't have the financial muscle to buy these beehives. So we come in, support them with the beehives, support the capacity that they need.
The UN Environment Programme says Kenya is one of the countries facing increasing effects of climate change, with communities living in arid and semi-arid areas being the most affected. Nature Kenya's Paul Matiku says beekeeping can be a game changer.
One beehive is able to give a farmer over 6,000 shillings annually, with only one harvest of honey. That is more than a farmer will get from an acre of maize in the drylands.
Kadenge says he currently produces 500 kilograms of honey from his 60 beehives per harvesting season.
And you can see the honey, clear honey.
With Kenya being a net importer of honey, experts say the arid and semi-arid areas like Tana River offer great potential for honey production that not only give the communities different livelihoods, but help conserve the environment. Juma Majanga, VOA News, Garsen, Kenya.
It's that time we hear from our listeners what we are doing better and what we should improve on. And we always ask you to send your comments to our WhatsApp number. That's +1 202 630 8011. We start with listener Jacob Dior Machweng from Lake State, Rumbek. He writes, "Good evening, South Sudan in Focus. It is devastating news that Rumbek East County headquarters was smashed by flooding a week ago for the second time, and no response from the Ministry of Humanitarian Affairs. What has Lake State done to deserve all this punishment indirectly? The road construction is the cause, and the top government is not putting pressure on the Africa Resource Construction Company, known as ARC, to complete the Bahr al-Ghazal Highway." Mading Malual Aluang in Juba writes, "We are exhausted from constant hearing of gunshots in Juba, like what happened yesterday in the suburb of Tomping. The authorities, along with the security apparatus, must take their responsibility seriously. This country has already shed too much blood, and its people have endured mass suffering. There should be no more suffering again in South Sudan. President Salva Kiir's administration has humiliated and betrayed his former spy chief, like what he did to former Chief of Defense Forces Paul Malong." Peter Agoch Anyong Majongdul in Awerel County of Menkaman writes, "Dear John Tanza, with the talks expected to resume in Nairobi for the Tumaini, we urge the parties to reach amicable solution in order to end the conflict in South Sudan so that the ordinary citizens can enjoy peace like other countries in the region. Enough is enough," Peter concludes. Hello, VOA. Wani James Natana from Bidibidi Refugee Camp writes, "My message to the international community is that Russia and Iran should severely be sanctioned and blocked from the membership of the UN Security Council because of their continuous supplies of arms across the world and in Africa in particular, meant for destruction of human race. That's according to Wani. Dr. Nyumbe Kalasabuni writes, hello VOA, about the birth abnormalities that is directly related to the oil exploration is not only happening in Unity State. It is also happening in other areas of the country, like in Upper Nile State. The effects of the flooding is causing on people there. I have pictures of birth defects of children born in Nasir Hospital due to effects of oil explorations. A lot more needs to be done by the government on that. That is according to Dr. Nyumbe Kalasabuni. Views expressed in this segment does not represent the views of the Voice of America or the management of the South Sudan in Focus. Keep your comments coming and please make it brief, and we shall sample them every Friday. Our WhatsApp number is +12026308011. We now end this show with Emmanuel Kembe and the song Akurubarao. We have been listening to Emmanuel Kembe and the song Akulubarao, which means eating alone. For more on our programs, visit www.voaafrica.com. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and our engineer, Shadrach, we wish you a lovely weekend. Remember to join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Shadia Kabalia.